Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Bloomberg Intelligence Talking Transport Podcast. I'm your host, Lee Klaskow, Senior Freight Transportation and Logistics Analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, Bloomberg's in-house research arm. Before diving in, a little public service announcement. Your support is instrumental to keep bringing great guests on the podcast like the one we have today. If you haven't already, please do take a moment to follow, rate, and share the Talking Transports Podcast. We appreciate your support. I'm very excited to have Olivia Lennox King, Chief Operating Officer of Cetus Maritime, a handy-sized ship owner and operator formed in 2023 as a result of a merger between Asia Maritime Pacific and HBC Hamburg Bulk Carriers. Olivia is responsible for the company's vessel sale, purchase, and new building activities and has overall responsibility for corporate matters, investor relations, compliance, media, and public relations. She also leads the company's legal and insurance departments from the company's Hong Kong office. She has over a decade experience in the shipping industry, holds an LLB and BA degree from the University of Auckland in New Zealand, and is admitted to practice as a solicitor in Hong Kong. Welcome to the Talking Transports Podcast, Olivia.
Hi, Lee. Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to speak to you and see you again on camera. Last we spoke was at a Bloomberg Shipping event earlier this year in Hong Kong.
That's right. It was also an excellent event. Thanks for that. And I think as a panelist and also an audience member, I learned a lot from that event. So thank you.
Well, we loved having you. So talk a little bit about Cetus. I gave a brief introduction. It's a handy-sized carrier. Can you talk about your fleet?
Sure. So Cetus is a relatively new name, as you mentioned. We only came into being as Cetus Maritime in January 2023. We have a fleet of around 40 owned and operated handy-sized vessels, which are vessels ranging from 8,500 deadweight being our smallest to our largest handy-size at 43,000 deadweight. 70% of the fleet is what we call eco-tonnage, which means increasingly fuel efficient and compliant with regulatory requirements. And we trade worldwide predominantly on the spot market. So we focus on minor bulk trades, niche trades, and the trades that we focus on generally correlate with smaller economies or industrializing economies and ports with less infrastructure because our vessels are geared.
And when you say geared, they have cranes?
That's right. So they have their own loading equipment, so they can load in ports or they can perform midstream loading. So I would say shipping people aren't the most imaginative when we name our ships. And handy size are so named because they're very handy. They're very useful.
Oh, and, yeah, I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I'm sure you know that Cape size are the largest size that can go around the Cape of Good Hope, and they can't fit through the Panama Canal. Yep, and handy size are so named because they're very useful, and they trade as tramps. And again, not very imaginative, but tramps go from port to port picking up cargoes. So although we do contract and contracts for affreightment and forward contracts, predominantly handy size vessels are known for tramp trading.
And so when you say spot, when you're in the spot market, are you talking about you arrange for a ship to go from point A to point B, or is it like you're leasing it out for a year where the whoever you're contracting with can take it to wherever that they want it to go?
Well, actually, the spot market refers to the time at which you're fixing. So spot means it's relatively prompt. Your vessel would be opening within sort of 30 days and you'd be looking for a cargo or a contract for it then. So that saying that you're trading in the spot market doesn't actually indicate whether you're putting your vessel out on as you say, on a charter or a lease to somebody else, or you're carrying your own cargoes. But in Cetus Maritime's case, we are, I wouldn't say unusual, but we are very specific in terms of our business strategy. We predominantly carry our own cargoes. We do not consider ourselves a tonnage provider. So our business model is not to rent our ships to other people. It's to put our own cargoes on our own ships.
Okay. Gotcha. And so who's your typical customer?
Well, Handysize is dry bulk as a general rule is pretty fragmented, and as you go down the sizes, the cargo, the people you're contracting with become increasingly fragmented as the parcel sizes get larger. So if you're looking at a Capesize, obviously you're trading with the big commodity houses, and there are, few charterers and a few receivers. But when you get to Handysize, because there's such a diversity of the cargoes that you're carrying, there's also a huge diversity in terms of the customers that you're dealing with. So we always say that there is no customer that makes up more than 5% of our annual cargo volumes, to give you an idea of how fragmented it is. So it could be anyone. If we're carrying logs, we may be dealing with log traders. We could be trading with large grain commodity houses. We could be doing cargo relets to other ship owners. We could be perioding, putting our vessels out on period on a charter, as you mentioned earlier, to a different ship owner. So it's a really broad range of customers for Handysize vessels.
And you did mention, minor commodities in terms of that's what Handys typically hauls, with the majors being coal and iron ore. Is there one specialty that CITES kind of handles, or are you really diversified across the broad minor categories?
No, we're really diversified. I wouldn't say that we specialize in something particularly. We have strength in certain markets. So historically, Asia Maritime Pacific, which was the precursor to CITES Maritime, was very strong in the China West African log trade, for instance. So we are specialists in the timber trade, as many Handysize owners who have log fitted vessels are, but in different markets. So you might be looking at the New Zealand China market, or you might be looking at the US market. But in our case, we have historically carried a lot of West African logs. But today, I would say that our cargoes are too diverse to really specify. We carry concentrates, we carry grains, project cargoes, fertilizers, all sorts of things. That category, minor bulk, it actually makes up 40% of the dry bulk industry, but it's very diverse. It could be, as I say, it's a wide range, and often you might be parceling different cargoes together in one shipment.
Gotcha. And currently, you guys have grown through a couple acquisitions, or the result of a couple acquisitions. You guys made one recently?
Yes, that's right. We have been in the news a little bit in shipping circles anyway, for a recent acquisition in March of this year. We acquired a Chilean ship owner operator with a 70-year history called Nechipa Corp. And Nechipa is a specialist in the South American market. That was a strategic acquisition on our part. As I said earlier, our business model is really is to operate our own cargoes and our own vessels. And in order to do that in an industry like dry bulk, and in a sector such as Handysize, you really have to have an on-the-ground presence, and you have to have chartering managers. Those are the people who are fixing the business onto the ships in the locations who have an on-the-ground presence. They understand their customers, they understand their business. So for us, South America was a very important market, particularly in terms of grain trades, and Nechipa really brought that expertise in combination with us.
And you've mentioned that, you like to do your own cargo. So from a layman's standpoint, someone might think that you actually own the cargo. Can you explain what you're talking about when you say you'd like to carry your own cargo? Are you saying versus chartering out your ships?
Yeah, I always think, as you mentioned at the beginning, Lee, I don't come from, I haven't always been in shipping. I was a lawyer once. And I have to say that I always find shipping language fairly imprecise and difficult to understand. People will use a number of terms interchangeably to mean totally different things. So let me try to explain that a little bit better. When we talk about our own cargoes, we don't own our own cargoes. We don't own any of our cargoes. We call it our own cargo book, as in that we will have cargoes that we have, that customers have come to us from the market and say, okay, we have, 10,000 metric tons of salt that needs to be moved from A to B. Have you got a
Right.
ship that can do it? And then we will say, yes, we have a shipment on this day, or our vessel can carry it within this laycan. And we consider that our own cargo. Whereas if we were to charter The other way of doing it would be to be as a tonnage provider. So another ship owner would come to us and say, oh, we have a requirement. Can we take that vessel at this price per day and for this period of time? And we say, yes, okay, you take the vessel. And then the cargo operations and the cargo is on their cargo book, not our cargo book. So that's what I talk about. That's what I mean when I'm talking about our cargo book is our own cargo business operation rather than a tonnage role.
Okay, that's I appreciate the clarification. And, you know, CETUS is currently private. Any plans to go public in the near or distant future?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question and pretty timely at the moment. You know, you mentioned our merger, but there's a lot of talk in the dry bulk market at the moment about consolidation, particularly among listed companies. One thing I would say is that this market is very fragmented, and there is a movement as we see more regulations coming in, as we see scale being more important for companies to get bigger. And obviously, in order to get bigger and grow, one source of equity is the public markets. So that's always been a goal for us in terms of growth. But on the other hand, we have our investor base is very experienced and very patient. So we wouldn't look for a listing event at any time when the markets weren't ready or when the company wasn't ready. We would only look at it to maximize value for the existing shareholders. So, I mean, always an open question, and it's something that we watch very closely. And I think we'll probably be seeing more listings of shipping companies, you know, in the medium term, for exactly the reasons I've mentioned, that shipping is becoming more complicated, more expensive. And as entry barriers go up, then you'll see more consolidation and therefore bigger companies with bigger equity base.
Right. Investment bankers will be happy to hear that. So how has the handy market perform relative to kind of other types of dry bulk ships?
Well, generally speaking, as you go down the sizes, your earnings become more stable, so less volatile. And that can be good and bad, as you know. It depends on an investor's appetite for how they would, what sector they would like to invest in within the dry bulk sector. So for handies, I would say that the 2023 market was not great, but not terrible. I mean, we saw very strong markets in 2021 and 2022. And the dry bulk experience generally, it's been pretty similar, but less volatile in the handy size sector. And possibly in the last, I don't know, 6 to 12 months, handy size has been looking more positive than the bigger sizes. And that's really partly due to the fact that the larger vessels trade the major bulks, so iron ore and coal. And those commodities are much more tied to the Chinese economy slowdown and the news coming out of China, but also the general, you know, fears about global recession. Whereas smaller vessels like handy size that trade minor bulks are more closely correlated to industrialization and GDP growth. And so that's one factor, is that the demand concerns are slightly different. But the other factor, the reason that we've seen reasonably good markets over the last year and very good markets prior to that, was really it's really supply driven. So although demand was disappointing in 2023, the reason the market was not great but not terrible was really largely due to our supply picture. So I'm not sure how familiar your audience is with the other shipping sectors, but tankers and containers have had, you know, equally strong years over the last few years. And usually ship owners, traditionally, we have great years and we order more ships. And that always shoots us in the foot, because as soon as we order more ships, the market is flooded with supply and rates go down. So right. what we've seen this time, since the end of 21-22, is that because shipyards have been full of higher value tonnage, gas carriers, tankers, container ships, all those types of vessels cost a lot more to build than a dry bulk carrier. The yards are full, or taking less or less interested in building dry bulk tonnage at competitive prices. So ship owners have held off ordering. The other factor is that we have incoming regulations that mean that most ship owners are slightly nervous about buying a very expensive asset that will have a 30-year operational life but may not be regulatorily compliant. I'm not sure if that's a word, but
and just not to interrupt, but yeah. You said it's an expensive asset. Roughly, if you and I want to go to the store and buy a new handy, how much would that cost us?
In the ballpark of $31 to $33 million, depending where you build it and
all right.
Specifications.
I'll call my banker.
But I mean, that's peanuts compared to what a new container ship or a cruise ship or a tanker or a LNG gas carrier costs. So shipyards see a lot more margin in building bigger tonnage. So, coming back to your question about the markets and why they are the way they are, is that we do not have this avalanche of orders coming in, flooding the market and reducing the supply demand balance. So at the moment, the reason the market is so volatile is because supply and demand are fairly closely balanced, and every time we have a demand disruption, the markets are very volatile and they move up and down depending on demand because we're in this finely balanced position.
So you mentioned demand disruptions. There's been a lot of dislocations in the market, whether it's the Ukraine Russia war or the crisis in the Red Sea or low water levels in Panama Canal. What's been the biggest impact to the handy size market?
I think recently we'd probably say the Red Sea disruption have had the biggest impact in the short to medium term. Or perhaps we see that as having the longest effect on the market more than the Russia-Ukraine war or the Panama. But all three of those factors are pretty, they all are affecting us in different ways and will continue to affect us in different ways. So, if you want me to talk about, the Red Sea, the impact of the Red Sea closure
absolutely. Yeah, sure. I'm assuming you guys have avoided the Suez Canal and Red Sea altogether.
Well, we have since probably September last year. To be honest, the Red Sea has the biggest impact on container vessels. But obviously, right. If you're trading between Europe and China, Australia, et cetera, that is a massive waterway for us, for shipping generally. So if it's closed, the obvious answer is that shipping goes around, and it goes around the long way. And if it goes around the long way and voyages take longer, the impact that has is that it takes supply out of the market. So because vessels are taking longer to perform a voyage, there are less vessels available to fix new business. It means that the supply side tightens. It means that rates go up. So in fact, short term or perhaps medium term, we can say that the Red Sea has had a positive impact on dry bulk in terms of the rates, because the ship owners will not in the medium to long term absorb that deviation. We will pass that cost on. So perhaps for, there'll be a voyage or two that was fixed in September where there'll be a dispute about whose account the deviation is from. But from then on, it will be priced into voyages. So what we talk about in shipping is the constant theme is supply and demand. But what we talk about within the supply space is latent supply. And that means vessels taking longer to get places or slowing down. So taking a longer route or slowing down. And that will have a major impact on latent supply within the market. And that's the impact that the Red Sea is having at the moment on the dry bulk market.
So, it's been over 2 years since the Russia-Ukraine war started. Did that change, where your ships went, because I'm assuming you were kind of involved in a lot of the exports out of Russia and Ukraine before then.
We as a company had not, I wouldn't say a huge percentage of our business had come from Russia, Ukraine. Just by the nature of our, our trade lanes, etc. We do trade worldwide and it does affect our business, but I mean, it wasn't by any means catastrophic. But for the dry bulk industry generally, and for the minor bulks, not just handy size Supras and the as you move up the sizes, it has had a significant impact, I would say, because Ukraine accounts for about 10% of the world's grain trade. So that was one major impact. The other has obviously been Russian sanctions and there are obviously a large number of cargoes coming out of Russia, but one I would focus on would be the fertilizer trade out of Russia, which is traditionally a handy-sized trade. Obviously, sanctions have made that very, very difficult, if not impossible. And Ukraine, and sanctions for different reasons, grain out of Ukraine is increasingly has been very difficult, and it's been a positive, you know, development, I'd say, in the last 3 or 4 months that Ukraine's opened its own grain corridor, and we're seeing a lot more. We're seeing more grain cargoes moving in the last 3 months than we've seen in the entire 2-year war, due to the success of the new corridor. So that's positive for obviously global food security, and also for the dry bulk industry.
So earlier you mentioned, you know, how new regulations could quicken the consolidation of the market. There's new IMO emission standards. I believe it's nowadays they want to be zero by 2050. How is CITES approaching these new mandates? You know, are you out there buying new ships that I don't know that operate on wind? Like, how are you guys dealing with that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, I would like to make a kind of broader comment to your listeners, which is that shipping is not very good at selling itself in terms of its emission reputation. And I think it's very easy for the globe to beat up on shipping, given that we carry 90% of the world's goods, but we account for 2% of the greenhouse gases. That's actually an enormous improvement from 2008, which is when we started collecting data. And I don't have the figure off the top of my head, but it was close.
I think it was like 7%, right?
I was going to say a bit over 3.5, something like that. But that's okay. Actually a...
You're probably right. Don't take my word for it. But take Olivia's word for it.
Well, whichever we take, the point is a significant improvement already in the measures that we've already been taking. So I think that's something that's important to remember, that shipping is very aware of its responsibilities and has been working towards change even without the IMO regulations. My views on the IMO regulations are, that's not what you asked me. So that's a separate question. But the fact is that there are incoming regulations that we have to comply with. And our belief is in the medium to short to medium, perhaps medium long term, compliance in our sector for smaller vessels and for dry bulk vessels will be through existing fuel technologies. We will not see the dry bulk fleet moving en masse to alternative fuels, and we will not see smaller vessels such as handysize moving en masse towards alternative fuels. I'm going to say, and I mean, I'm not a betting for whatever my word is worth, I don't see that happening en masse sort of in the next 10 to 15 years, that a big proportion of the fleet will move. So what does that mean? That means that within the current fuel and technology constraints, we have to improve our performances. And that's not that difficult to do, as in there are a lot of efficiencies to be gained out of operating what we call conventional tonnage. And what I mean by that is vessels that operate on diesel. There are two ways of doing that. The first is to buy more fuel efficient vessels or better vessels. And that's what CITES Maritime has been doing. Over the last 18 months, we have sold out a lot of our older tonnage and bought younger, modern, larger vessels. So now, as it stands today, we have about 75% of our fleet would be classified as eco-tonnage, which compares, to the global fleet, only about 30% of the fleet is eco-tonnage.
And that's of the handy size market?
That's actually of the dry bulk fleet generally.
Dry bulk, okay.
Yeah. So there are a number of things that we can do. There are a number of levers that shipping can pull to improve our performance. The first is that we can retrofit vessels with new technologies to improve speed and consumption. So we can paint them with low friction paints. We can install various technologies that improve turbine power and hull performance. There are a wide range of technologies, and we are all trying them out, and we are all trying to understand where the efficiencies are being found and, the cost benefit analysis. So that's being done actively across the industry. And I would say that we are very active in that space. We are trying out a lot of different things on our vessels. And when we buy new vessels, we spend a lot of time looking at their emissions. You can fit these new technologies on older, less eco vessels, but then you have a shorter runway in terms of how long that vessel will remain relevant. If you fit them on younger vessels that are already more eco, that vessel has a longer economic life in which it will comply with the regulations. So that is what I would say most larger established handy size operators that with a strong balance sheet are doing is upgrading their fleet generally. The other things, there are two other things that we're doing. One is that we are investing in voyage optimization. So weather routing, route planning, and more sophisticated commodity trading. So just-in-time arrivals, talking more closely with our customers in order to reduce waiting time and congestion. And the final one, which is probably, this is not obviously in order of efficiency, because this is what the majority of the world fleet will be doing, is slowing down. Because when a vessel slows down, its emissions reduce exponentially. So a small reduction in speed can have a very significant reduction in terms of carbon emissions.
Okay, and that will also take out supply in the market and I guess be a positive for rates as well.
Yeah, you read my mind. That's exactly what I was about to say. So we would say, you know, on a conservative estimate over the next few years, that the slowdown of vessels to comply with IMO regulations is about will add about 2% capacity. Or sorry, that's the wrong way around. Take out 2% capacity from the market.
Right. So let me ask you a question about insurance, because in your bio it says you handle kind of insurance for the company as well. What has insurance rates done over the last year with all of these new risks that shipping companies are facing? How much has it increased? I'm assuming it's increased.
Yeah, that's actually a difficult question to answer because it's very vessel dependent. It's very route dependent, so how long you would spend in a high risk area. So additional premium in the industry we call AP is typically calculated on the amount of time that the vessel spends in an area rather than the entire voyage. But there are, and this isn't, you know, a novel feature of the market at the moment, is that there are additional risk factors that the insurance market is having to price in that it previously didn't have to experience. So for instance, vessels trading through the Red Sea may see an increase in their premiums if they have US connections, because the Houthi rebels have explicitly said that they'll be targeting American vessels. So that's yet another challenge on the, you know, shipping landscape in terms of how we trade and how we price in these risk factors. And some of them aren't, you know, it's not capable of being priced in. You can't price in the risk to your crew when you trade through a war risk area such as the Red Sea. So some risks and some costs are quantifiable, like insurance, and others are not capable of being quantified and are probably more significant.
And so we're coming up at the end of our time, unfortunately. You know, so you mentioned, you know, you've been in the industry, or maybe I mentioned it, you've been in the industry for 10 years. How did you get your start in the shipping? Because sometimes people are born into it and sometimes people stumble into it. So I've always find it interesting to hear from folks like yourself how you got involved in the industry.
Right. Well, I certainly wasn't born into it, although my great-great-grandfather was a shipbuilder. So it must be in there somewhere. But certainly I started my career as a lawyer. And in my undergraduate dissertation, I had written my undergrad dissertation in salvage law. So I had some academic background in maritime, but certainly when I started my career, I was not involved with shipping at all. Shipping law is quite a niche area. And I, being a junior lawyer and in those days, very interested in, you know, money and job security coming out of the global financial crisis, I went into more generalist corporate law. And it just came down to chance that I met some guys that ran a shipping company who inspired me to come and work for them, take a risk. I was in my 20s and I thought shipping was particularly interesting. And I was frustrated with law in that I wasn't close enough to the industrial side. I wasn't close enough to the business. I enjoyed working with my customers, and well, and my clients, I should say, sorry, that's a force of habit, with my clients in terms of solving their problems. But then they would, you know, being in private practice, they would take their problems away, and I would never see the corporate ramifications or the commercial ramifications of those problem solving, you know, documents we'd put in place. So I wanted to get closer to a business, and shipping, you know, had always interested me. It was a gamble, but I'm very happy to say it was one that paid off. You know, I can't recommend shipping highly enough to anyone. It's an incredibly interesting industry. There are so many different facets to it. There are so many different, you know, areas you can go into. And what it's so interesting about what I do is that working in dry bulk and being really close to, you know, global trends and industrialization and developing economies, you really develop a wider worldview about what's happening in the world and how that will impact something like shipping and supply demand. So yeah, it's great. It's great business.
Yep. And it's truly global, yeah. And it lets you travel a little bit too, I bet.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
All right, Olivia, we got to wrap it up. I want to really thank you for your time. I really appreciate the conversation, learning more about CITUS and the handy market.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great chat.
Yep. And thanks for tuning in. If you like the episode, please subscribe and leave a review. We've lined up a number of great guests for the podcast. Check back to hear conversations with C-suite executives, shippers, regulators, and decision makers within the freight markets. Also, if you have an idea for a future episode, please hit me up on the Bloomberg Terminal or on Twitter at Logistics Lee. Thanks, everyone. And take care.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.